Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Yeah, but like, what's the point in picking Ramsey out? I mean, you've just watched the manager crash the ship into rocks, and then you've walked down into the hole, pointed at one of the rowers, and said, "You cunt, come with me." What the fuck are you at?
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
Seconds. 1 minute and 56 seconds. Like, that's all we got. One minute and 56 seconds of optimism, of, you know, a new start. Like, everybody saw the team sheet and thought, wow, look at that bench. Like, this is great. It's a new season. The manager has gotten the pre-season that I never shut the fuck up about all last season. He got the pre-season to work with the team. Here we go. We're playing... here we go. I need to learn how to pronounce... Bournemouth. I almost slipped into Bournemouth there, and I thought, oh, wouldn't this be a nice little cute segment that we could talk about me not being able to pronounce? No, there's nothing fucking cute about today. We got 1 minute and 56 seconds of bliss, and then it was ruined. We were all reminded of the team we support, of the spineless nature of them, and then the Villa account, now call me a conspiracy theorist, but they were tweeting out then saying after 3 minutes that they've conceded. It was 1 minute and 56 seconds we conceded. Didn't even have the ball, and we conceded a goal to newly promoted Bournemouth. The opposition went ahead, 1-0, and that was it. And I'm once again, like, replay the tapes. Like, we shouldn't. There's no point in doing this podcast. Just go through all last season. We said it all. We were never going to come back after 60 minutes. The commentators were talking about the formality of this win now. Like, you know, what a win this is going to be for Bournemouth. Like, this is a great start for them, because they're going into three actually tough games next. They got Villa. They got a big opportunity at home to these chumps. And that was it. And you know what? The 3 minute thing as well worked. Like, that spin that the Villa account put out there. I saw everybody then laughing at how pathetic we were. You know, like, oh, 3 minutes. Even Villa fans themselves being like, for fuck's sake, you give us 3 minutes. They didn't even give us 3 minutes. And this is a new season, a new dawn.
Yeah, and it was the third game that I've watched, and just thinking about it, you know, Crystal Palace, they lost two of their better players, but after half an hour last night, they looked like they were good again. Like, if they could just tell Mark Guy to not tie his laces as the ball's coming into his 6 yard box at stomach height, like, they should be all right. Arsenal look like they've got the most un-Arsenal centre half, although the fact that he's been at the club for 3 years, where they're out splashing 50 million quid on Ben White is pretty Arsenal. Fulham look really good this afternoon. All the excitement these clubs have, they look like it could be this year's Brentford or Leeds from 2 years ago. And Aston Villa look like we could be this year's Aston fucking Villa. Bournemouth are not a serious club. Like, they're doing well for how pathetic they are. I mean, they've got an 11,000-seater stadium and they're competing with no other club for 500,000 people. Come on. The broadcast angle in the stadium looked like the camera was on someone's fucking shoulder. And when they get relegated, the important thing to remember, and don't worry, you'll be given plenty of reminders as the season progresses, the important thing to remember is that it's not Scott Parker's fault. And the annoying thing is, when he oversees his third relegation in 4.5 years, it won't actually have been his fault, because Bournemouth aren't good. They're a championship club with championship players, and they've made us look like exactly what we are. A fucking pile of shitbags. In the last 18 months, we're averaging a point a game. And if you take out the new manager bounce and getting to play Norwich twice. It's fucking grim. We're so bad, it's unbelievable. Like, in the last two seasons, we've had two modes of attack. Give the ball to Grealish or dick around with it, playing around the outside of teams. And then when the opposition realise we're useless and they even suggest they might put a bit of pressure on, we lump and aim this ball forward. Like, the fear in this team to play a pass is unbelievable.
It's crazy. And it's crazy how one goal can undo everything after a minute and 56 seconds. Like, that, I say undo everything. I assume there wasn't anything else planned, because the amount of long balls that we put up there, we're going to get into the tactical talk and stuff a bit later, but what was the crack of all the crossing? Is that what we were planning the whole preseason? Is that what Gerrard wanted to get these boys for that extended period of time for? So that they could just float shit crosses into the box. I saw a stat, 31 fucking crosses, six found a head, or I don't even know if found a head, or found a person, and I can remember one, which is obviously up for the Rosenthal Award, that actually found a person in a position that he should have scored. The rest of them, I don't know, did they find somebody at the far side of the box when it was overhit? The amount of aimless passing of play, like, it's scary how bad Villa are, and it's scary how bad they are tactically, how bad they look on the ball, how devoid of ideas they are, how spineless they are, how bad they are in defence. Like, go through the fucking list, and here we are. Like, it's just, here we are again. What were we expecting, really? Like, what were we expecting?
I have no idea. Like, the crossing comes from the fact that we're just playing around the edges of the game. Like, Bailey and Coutinho, Ramsey and McGinn all coming out on the loop to pick the ball off from the centre half and then give it to the other centre half. Today was unbelievable, the amount of times we ignored our midfield to turn it over the top. The amount of times we ignored an overlap or an underlap to cross the fucking ball in. And every time, over the top or the cross, it went to the Bournemouth back three. It was unbelievable. How have we been talking about this for 18 months and nothing's been done about it? Yeah. Sorry, something has been. We've changed their manager and it hasn't changed. We've slagged off Arsenal for the culture that just seems to transcend generations at their club. That spineless yellow streak. What's our culture as a football club? Unable to play football?
Yeah, unable to play football, unable to create an identity, unable to create a culture, really. Like, our culture is that we're the most uncultured team in English football. And yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I went back to the Watford games. Obviously, Villa are notoriously terrible on the opening day.
We're back to the Watford game to feel better, did you? To watch us put in a decent performance by comparison.
Yeah, well, at least we had the mercy of going 3-0 down in that game, and as we all know, like, we come to life then. But like, we've changed, like, six different players started today from that team. Like, that's in the space of 11 months, and we changed the manager, and we've brought in more players on top of that. Like, and this is like, give us flexibility. The bench did look great on paper as well. Like, we have completely refreshed everything, and it doesn't matter. The same shit prevails. You just talked about the average amount of points we're getting per game. It's now worse than what Dean Smith's bad year was. Like, that time Grealish got injured and it just kept going until November. It's now averaging worse than that. It's 2 wins in 12 games against 2 teams that were relegated. And now we're struggling against. Like, we're not struggling. We're getting outplayed by a team who've just come up from a championship and are searched to go back down.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're guaranteed to go back down as well. And there was the really frustrating thing for me was Villa brought on Buendia for Ramsey at halftime, and the commentator announces Gerrard blinks first. I think he must have seen Gerrard open his eyes from the nap he was having during the first half and just assumed it was a blink. Like, nobody should ever panic after conceding an early goal, but you also shouldn't do nothing.
Yeah,
like, it's an immediately different game to the one that you've planned for, so you need a new plan. It's like we were trying to kill the game, kill the crowd, keep possession, draw them out, wait for the gaps to appear. We're 1-0 down. There are no gaps. As for the fucking crowd, it's like we congratulated them on the return to the Premier League by throwing them a fucking party. It's handing out goodie bags at the door with bottles of Jägermeister and 6-pack of Red Bull and a gram of Coke. And then standing there looking at them going, God, I don't know where they're getting their energy from. This is unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about the two goals of the game. First one, like I said, was inside 2 minutes. Before boys would have even gotten a stream to watch the match, like the bubble was burst. They were coming in to realize that this game was already over. We're already behind, and It's just a floated corner in. Like, no one's tight. Konsa doesn't get high enough. It doesn't look like he wants to get up enough or at all. And, like, I know it's funny because everybody like to... I think there's a thing out there now at the minute, you know, when Mings isn't playing, or who are we going to blame now that Mings isn't playing? But surely of all the games, this would have been a game for Mings. Like, they're playing Solanke and Murr up top. They're not... It's completely obvious from their team sheet what they're going to do. It's five at the back. It's not wing backs. It's five. It's three workman-like centre midfielders, and then they're just going to lump it up to Kiefer Moore and Solanke and see what happens. And of course, like, that's how the two goals came from as well. And of course, we didn't play probably or definitely our best player in there. We played Konsa, who doesn't seem they want to get into there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when the ball comes in, the Konsa, he was on his heels for that initial cross. I mean, he looks like he's jumping out of a bowl of porridge. And Carlos as well isn't tight enough. And the annoying thing is, that ball is going to the back post clear as fucking day. And we're not ready for it. But when it falls to Lerner, I mean, it should be easier for him to get through Dublin Airport than the amount of bodies that were between him and the fucking nets. There are four Villa players there, for fuck's sake.
But they're all inside the box. It's inside the small box. It's four Villa players just crowded inside the six-yard box while he's sort of standing about 9-10 yards out.
Yeah, and Cash and JJ go out, to be fair to them, to block it. They don't get there in time. And look, maybe Ings and Kamara are expecting them to block it and they've just started to peel away for the counter-attack, because it just couldn't be what it looked like, that we have two professional footballers that are afraid of the ball. Like, they were going out of their way to get out of the way of that shot. It was really fucking pathetic.
Well, speaking of getting out of the way, Luca Dina couldn't find him. I couldn't spot him in the box doing any defending. No. He was over taking his jewellery off on the sideline while a corner is being taken. Like, what the fuck? I don't think it would have affected the goal, but, like, it just really smacked of... What sort of attitude Villa brought to today? Why is, like, what the fuck is that about? Like, what is going on? Why is that stuff not just unspoken? Like, lads, we're prepared for this match. Take your jewellery off. I'm like, in fairness to Steven Gerrard, why would he even think of saying something like that? Let's go out and let's be ready for this match. Are we ready to rock? No, we're not. Oh, sorry, shit, 2 minutes in, forgot my jewellery. Hang on, I'll head over here. It's a corner. Ah, it should be all right. No, it's not all right. It's 1-0. It's game over.
This game before after 2 minutes. Yeah, I hope it was a fucking choker necklace, and I hope it was a couple of sizes too small. What a plonker.
Second goal, I mean, I don't know. Like, I need to talk to some centre halves or defensive coaches or whatever, but, you know, Konsa gets dragged over to the left hand side again, and I'm wondering why. Maybe he has to, I don't know. Maybe you don't want to just give someone all that space. They're so close to your goal, but I just feel like if you're playing two centre halves, you should be shifting players over. Like, you're passing them on. If somebody's running into somebody else's channel, then just leave them off. Play the offside trap, etc., etc. I don't know. It just seems a bit weird that players just vacate their position, especially then when the ball is going to get crossed into exactly that position. And then especially when you've got three of the lamest players underneath, you don't want to go up for that cross. Like, it's Murr that's in there. You can't believe his luck. He's got Matt Cash backing off. Got Kamara sort of peeking over the top of his head, and McGinn just doesn't want to get involved, it seems like. He's sort of running around in circles. Three of them just snapping away at the heels as he goes up for the easiest header he's ever going to get.
Yeah, imagine Kiefer Moore being 3-8 yards out in your box. I mean, he's so fucking tall, he went up for a header at the beginning of the second half and his ears popped. It's scandalous how easily we lost our shape, our concentration, and their 6'5" centre forward. You don't need to talk to a centre half to understand that we cocked up there. And whenever we do cock up, Cash has to tuck in. Konsa might have handed him over, but make sure the fucking Cash has got a grip of him as well before you do just leave him off there. Yeah. And John McGinn's arse is the perfect thing for Kiefer Moore. This is the time to use it, John. Get it out. Fucking put it away when you're in centre midfield. Whip it out when you're in your own box. Yeah. Back into him. Just put your arse against his thighs. Jesus Christ, he's up free in the box. He's a 6'5" centre forward.
I would say to begin, like, yeah, just to simplify it, any box, use your arse. when you're outside the box, just forget about it. Like, don't use it then. Like, no matter what, even if it is good sometimes, just the risk-reward isn't enough. But in either box, like, look at the playoff final. Like, just use your arse on the keeper. Use your arse anybody around you. Back off into everything you see. And, yeah, like, outside the box, forget it. Like, but I don't know. Like, that goal just really... If Luca Dean sort of summed up the attitude we brought to the game, like, that goal just summed up how the rest of the game went then as well. Just like, I've never seen a game pass by as quickly in all my life. Like, I mentioned the commentators talking about the formality after an hour, and I don't think anybody would have been listening to that, any Villa fan, thinking, shut up, that's a bit unfair. I think we all knew what was going to happen. Like, time just flies by. Whenever Villa are in the lead, like, time does speed up. It's crazy.
Time speeds up, and you know what doesn't? The fucking Aston Villa play, ever. Like, once we start a game with no energy, it's just, there's no coming back from it. You can see a Villa defeat straight, especially whenever the opposition scores after 1 minute and 56 seconds. But you can see a Villa defeat immediately once you can just tell. Like, their players didn't even know the rule. They weren't even prepared enough to take off their jewellery. Like, what the fucking hell?
Let's go to WhatsApp windows. All right, some fines just to get out of the way before we rattle through the rest of them. Didn't think I'd have to do this. Hoping I'll have to do it again. But look at Dina for wearing jewellery during the game and then going off during the game to take his jewellery off. Like, geez, that's not in the rule book, but it has to be added in now because of the special circumstance, and it has to be more than a week's wages, I'd imagine. When you add that to, he is the man who also crossed the ball out for a goal kick as well. He is not getting paid probably for the rest of this month. And the only other person I have is Diego Carlos for doing the McGinn shot from 35 to 40 yards, just chancing his arm, you know, like, again, there's so many moments here that you could pick that summed up Aston Villa and their limpness, and like, there's another one, just centre half, just like, why not, we're not doing anything else, I'll try a shot here for the crack.
Well, like, the why not is easily answered, but also, as he was winding up for that, I mean, he was winding up for it for so long as well, and at no point did he think, maybe I should put my body in a position where I can actually strike this football cleanly. Yeah. Like, he was running up to it at the wrong angle and then just fucking threw a leg at it anyway. And when you're 35 yards out, you need to be right before you fucking hit the ball.
Yeah, he literally just threw a leg at it and thought, like, let's see,
like,
what happens.
Threw a leg at it from 35 yards. Like, what the fuck? It's not like a ball bouncing around the 6-yard box. Just throw a leg at it. Let's see. Hopefully I can just get something on it and it'll go in.
The first WhatsApp whinge is, I mean, where is Steven Gerrard's pride? Because Scott Parker has just absolutely bossed him. Scott Parker has bossed Steven Gerrard, a man who showed up in a Top Gun uniform. Like, it looks like he's dressed for Halloween. Football 3, shipping out with the Navy at 5. Like, what? imagine not only being beaten, but being absolutely bossed by a man running around in a jacket like that.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the man that made Steven Gerrard look like he was wearing a clown outfit. I mean, we were destroyed by a team. Being led by someone that thinks it's okay to leave the house like it's Halloween night. Fuck, it's grim.
I don't know. I've never seen it in my life. Nobody knows what we're talking about. Just go by. I'll tweet out a picture of it. Like, he's wearing a blazer with stripes on the arm. It looks like he's taking the piss out of the Scott Parker thing now at this stage. Second WhatsApp whinge. I mean, talking about Scott Parker, boss, and Steven Gerrard. Villa were bullied today. And the saddest thing is that I actually think this Villa team, and this is a theme now, are far too happy to take those fouls that they're given in the middle of the pitch because they want a breather. How often was that poor commentator looking at those poor Aston Villa players and he felt the need to mention how hot it was? You know, hot sunny day out there. Yeah, it's the same for every other fucking team playing. But every time a Bournemouth player came in close to a Villa player, they went over and they took their free and they let the opposition just go back and set up, and they rolled around the ground. They got their drink. They just took ages, like, and they were just delighted to stop the game dead because they couldn't cope with the intensity of it.
Yeah, it was really, really, really pathetic. And we were playing, like, Philip Billing was the centre midfielder for Bournemouth today. I mean, there's a reason why whenever they got relegated 2 years ago, 3 years ago, nobody went in for him. There's a reason why he's been left in the Championship to come back up with the same club. There's no one's interested in him because he's not that good at football, and he just completely overran us. And it was so pathetic from Villa, the amount of breaks that they wanted. that the referee ended up forgetting that the rules have been tweaked again, that the bar has been raised again, that you shouldn't be given frees for this. The ref just started giving them then after a while. Like, Aston Villa are the only team that seem unprepared for this. The amount of times they were just sitting on the ground looking up at the ref, that's not a fucking foul anymore. Get up, McGinn. What the fuck are you doing? Not only is that pathetic, you're also the captain now, so definitely fucking cut it out.
Yeah.
JJ was at it. Kamara was at it. Or fucking New Rock.
Did you see Anthony Taylor last night during the Arsenal Crystal Palace game? Like, there was a man who's here to play some football or to watch some football, like, not to blow the whistle every 2 seconds. Like, every time players came together and went down, every time somebody was looking for it, he just wasn't having it. Like, and actually, after a while, it did take a bit of bedding into both teams, but after a while, then I think everybody just, and the crowd as well, started accepting, all right, we're not getting fouled for shite things anymore. Do you know, when you have a good referee actually applying it consistently, but in this case, I think both teams were sort of happy for it to happen. You know, Bournemouth wanted to get back and set up, and Villa wanted them to get back and set up so they could have a bit of space outside and play around on their own. So I think the ref in that case stepped in and just said, yeah, this will keep everybody happy. I'll give the foul.
Yeah, and you're right to point out that game. I mean, it was a lot like that time Raheem Sterling conceded 2 penalties because he introduced the rule where if you touch anybody in the box, it's a penalty. Oh, and he got done in the first game of the season. And last night was like first game of the season syndrome. And you would expect that the Aston Villa players were watching football last night. But given how they played, I'm not sure if these lads have ever watched a game of football before in their lives. So there's no reason for us to think that they might know that the rules have changed.
The last WhatsApp whinge is, what a bunch of offside merchants. I've never seen a team with as little men forward. Like, Villa commits so little bodies forward, it's scary. And with that amount of people forward, I've never seen as many offsides in all my life. A team with as little men forward be offside so often. How can that happen? It seems like, pound for pound, I'd say Villa are the most, like, today anyway, we're the most offside team of all time.
But I think that probably just speaks to how cowardly they are in contact, how cowardly they are on the ball. All they wanted was space, and there's a lot of fucking space behind an opposition's backline for a reason, because they know you can't go in there when the opposition has the ball. But they were just making the runs too early because they didn't have the courage to wait for it. They wanted to get away from the opposition. They didn't want to have a man beside them whenever they were receiving the ball. That's why they were coming back out and playing around the outside. That's why they were running offside like it was going out of fashion.
But this is the thing, like, you know, these players, they need to know that, do you know that pass to Kamara or whoever the defensive midfielder is? It's so easy because that's what the opposition wants you to do. Like, you know, of course he's on all the time because they're not worried about him there. Coutinho needs to know that there's so much space out at the halfway line because that's exactly where the opposition want them to be. They're not worried about you there. Like, Villa, it is mad that we're still talking about it, but they need to learn. And yeah, they need to grow a set of balls as well, but they also need to learn to play more difficult football. Like, the reason the best players in the world are so good is because they do things that are hard. Like, you can't decide games doing what the Villa players were doing today. Like, just turning around on the sideline, getting it back to Kamara, or having your most creative, most dangerous player drift out to take the ball off Konsa. Like, how is that going to impact anything? How are you really going to take charge of a game if you're not going to take the ball in a really perilous position for both you and the opposition? Like, that, like, that's how, like, a balance switches in. That's how you can tilt it. And if you look at, I think the reason Buendia is so popular and effective now as well is, like, you see when he gives it away, it's often he's giving it away to a player who just has to scramble it clear, because he is always trying to make something happen quickly. He's trying to make something happen in a really dangerous tight space, and anybody around him, then, even if he is, like, his pass is loose or his touch is loose, the other team are just like, fuck, like, you know, and they react and they don't have time to get a touch on it and start moving out with the ball. They just clear it away, and usually that keeps Villa going, and that gets his gander up then as well, and he goes looking for the ball again, and it makes something else happen again. And when you do that over, and why am I explaining football to a bunch of professional footballers who are way better at football than me?
Well, this is the thing. That is absolutely the reason why Buendia is the most popular player at Villa, because he wants to play football. It's so simple. It's mind exploding. Yeah. another thing that the players need to realise that there's no risk in rattling the ball into your midfielder, or there's no risk in the midfielder rattling the ball into their forward, because you shouldn't be fucking up that pass. It's grand. Play it through the gap. There's a gap there. Play it into your midfielder. If there is no gap, the midfielder has to go fucking make the gap and get the ball in behind the opposition striker. But there's also no risk there, because Bournemouth are playing a back five and Kiefer Moore is up top. It's fucking grand. Like you said, whenever Buendia tried it, they just lumped the ball away. Of course they did. They're fucking shit. Rat all of your players. You're one line up for me.
Yeah. That pretty much sums it up, but we'll have to give out some awards after this.
You mean he's like a fucking excited dog?
Doggy Louise. There's no point in all fucking three running over the ball. It's like someone has to kick it.
I honestly don't think Dougie knows what routine is being called.
Dougie.
You know, he's like a fucking excited dog. Like just happy to be there. McGinn and Buendia run over the ball and fucking Dougie comes bounding in. What are we doing, guys? Running over a ball, is it? Oh, that looks like fun. Oh, you guys are the best. Dougie should have spent the next 20 minutes licking his neck, snapping at his ankles, humping his leg. Like a good boy. That looks like fun. Oh, you guys are the best. No, where are you going? You're the last one. You have to hit it. That's a bad Dougie. That's a bad dog.
All right, let's start with the Ronnie Rosenthal Award. Had a depressingly short list of nominations. I think I've only got two. It really speaks of how bad Aston Villa were. I think I've got two outsider nominations, really, from an Aston Villa point of view. It's the one that Cash played forward to Leon Bailey, who had a nice little flick onto Danny Ings, who probably should have taken it on the half volley on his right foot, but he decides to get it onto his left foot and have a tame shot. And it's an other Danny Ings nomination then as well, of course. The one cross that I remember that found his man was Luca Dean finds Danny Ings, who just heads it way over the bar from 6 yards out.
Yeah, it's actually JJ. It's a delicious little Watkins-esque header from him into Danny Ings. But like, Danny Ings is less threatening than a kitten in a pram. And then the next thing down the ladder of terror is Danny Ings on his left foot from the edge of the box. And it was a good technique to turn onto his left, but a terrible idea to turn onto his left. And the header, like it's a good recovery from Digne, but and he hangs it up well. It's the right cross for a centre forward. And Mempman is fucked because it's above his head. He's stuck in the spot and Ings has the run. But as always, it's only the ball boy that's called into action.
Yeah. That's it. Like, and even from a Bournemouth point of view, like it was such an uneventful game. They got the two goals, and I think I've got one more nomination for them, and it was a better nomination than any of Villa's. Really, it was Solanke. McGinn gets done at the edge of the box. He's planted his 2 feet and just drifted by him. And then Cash and Konsa both just go like hell for leather, going from right to left, chasing the runner who just like drops it off very nicely to Solanke, who's going the other direction, and Villa's two right-sided defenders are made to look like absolute mugs, and Solanke has a tame shot when he should have done way better.
Yeah, it was absolute panic stations. It was like they all had heat stroke, and it was a decent save from Martinez. I think he should have done better as well to take it in, because you're right, it was a fairly tame shot, but like three players getting taken out by fairly rudimentary things at the edge of our own box says it all, really.
What's the winner? Probably the header from Danny Ings. Like, once again, Danny Ings thinks that he's going to get away with this award because he's made it look like such a non-chance that he doesn't think it'll be nominated. But like, again, that has to be a goal. He's 6 yards out. It's sat up for him. He gets his head to it, but he never once looked like even getting half around it, never mind over it. It was just came straight under it and cleared it over the bar.
He's got a real fucking habit with getting under headers as well. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Has he never practiced heading? He just doesn't seem to understand that you head the ball down. Like, you've told that your whole life, Danny. It wasn't a joke. People aren't taking the piss out of you. You're not going to get caught out. Fucking head the ball down. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's the winner anyway. New category, Liam.
Oh.
The Remy Gard. Are you even bothered? The Are You Even Bothered award has to go to Matt Cash today. Like, that was the least Matt Cash performance I can remember from Matt Cash. Like, not getting forward. There was one stage Kamara was breaking. He intercepted the ball and he drove forward. And it's just, like, he gets so pissed off. He looks, he's right, and he stops and he says, come on! Like, what are you doing? Cash was just looking at him. He looks so lethargic all game. Like, he sat someone down at the edge of the box with, like, sort of the same sort of dummy that Danny Ings threw. And all he had to do was just slide Bailey in, and instead he just takes a left-footed shot into a body. Like, it was never going to happen. Like, the goal, I thought his involvement for the goal was the worst. The second goal was pitiful, actually, just the way he made himself smaller for Kiefer Muir. And there was a mishit as well. Buendia switched the play late on. Nice pass from left to right. Like, not to labour this point, but Buendia's making football look way easier than the rest of them are. It's like, you know, you get the ball to one side of the pitch where all the other team shift over, and now you try and shift the ball to the other side where there's space, and you try and get an overload over there, and he finds Matt Cash. He just completely mishits it, and the worst, like, the mishit was bad enough, and then he just follows it up with the laziest fouling that you've ever seen. And I thought this boy was bad today. He's definitely the winner of the Remy Gard award.
Imagine spending your time going back over this match. Fucking hell. So everything you said there gave me palpitations. It was fucking so pathetic. That one where he just didn't play Leon Bailey through. You can understand that from a couple of reasons. Like, you know, Matt Cash thinks he's fucking Cristiano Ronaldo, and he obviously thinks Leon Bailey is not. He was having a shot all day long there as well. He wanted it on his right. He only dummied it because he didn't get it out of his feet quick enough. Otherwise, he would have shot, shifted it onto his left. Also didn't get it out of his feet quick enough, but the chance had gone, so he had to have a shot. It was fucking pathetic. And yeah, you're right. It's amazing, absolutely amazing, that Matt Cash and the entire team could be so lethargic. Like, it's the first game of the season, and we were playing like the last 11 of last year. Like, we'd given up, like, we're on the fucking beach. It was bizarre. I couldn't believe it. I don't care how hot it is. You've just come back from your fucking holidays. You've just been brought into the prime of your fitness. What the fuck are you doing, unable to run around? Like, it wasn't that hot. The game was in England.
Yeah, this is definitely the earliest we've ever gone to the beach. But it feels like, you know, the next 37 games are a write-off, really. They're already gone. Like, they're looking to get on their holidays again.
They must have had a fucking great time.
Yeah. Do you like Glenn Whelan take a 90th-minute penalty award? First place to start, really. I think it was a surprise to everybody. Ings up top on, like, instead of Watkins is one thing, but also just Ings up top on his own. Like, is Ings a lone striker? I don't think he is. And then especially when you proceed to play the way we played, like, just like long balls forward, like, once again, why would you not play one of the better strikers in the league for that?
Yeah, it's. I think it's strange. I think it was, like, both of those really capture the biggest mistakes I think he's made. And, like, Bournemouth were playing a back three, so a 4-3-3 shape allows you to get, should allow you to get behind the wing back, pull one out of the centre halves out. But when you have Leon Bailey cutting back, going short with the regularity of a shit barber, you'll not be pulling anything out except for Villa fans' teeth. And if ever there was a wide player not designed to exploit the space, not designed to go in behind, it's Philippe Coutinho. But also, we're the big boys here. I mean, like, you guaranteed a 7th place finish on Thursday, for fuck's sake. Like, let's be a bit more ambitious. I think our diamond and front two would have been perfect, and then use Cash and Dinya to exploit the gaps behind the wing-backs. And Bournemouth scored after 2 minutes. It's a different game. Yeah. Bournemouth are always going to be tight, compact, mad for it, but it's heightened now. How are we going to get through this? I don't want to get bogged down in formations, because the big problem seems to be that Gerrard thinks that deciding the formation is the extent of his job. Like, did you see us set up whenever Carlos, Kamara or Konsa had the ball? Did you see us repeat anything? Repeat any movements? Try the same run? Did you see us try to create any overloads? Try anything to open space and then try it again and again? Yeah. We didn't have anything. Like, we weren't playing in any particular way. We were just sent out there and then figuring out ourselves, and we don't have the fucking players to figure it out themselves.
Yeah, like there are no patterns, there are no shape. Yeah, nothing that's repeating itself, like you say. Like it is just a lot of randomness, and I think I might have speculated on Thursday, and then I quickly dismissed it, or I suggested I was maybe being too harsh too soon on Gerrard when I was like, well, I'm not going to compare him to Mourinho. But I do wonder, is there an element of that? Like, this is what I was sort of getting at on Thursday, where it was like, I think he's sort of trying to sort out the defence, is all he ever talks about. And then I think he thinks the attack should sort itself out, which obviously isn't the case. And obviously the better teams and the best managers don't let that happen. But I do wonder, is that what's happening with Gerrard here? It's just like, I'm so obsessed with trying to not concede. And then if we have enough quality, they should sort it out themselves.
Yeah, and he's going to be caught out a lot with that, because the game has moved so far beyond sorting out your defence. Do you know why? Because every manager has decided it's really important to sort out your defence. So they're all fucking doing it. And it's really easy to defend an 8-foot by 24-foot frame. It's not fucking difficult when you've got 22 players that you can use to do that. So the next element, the most important element in the world of football right now, is figuring out how you're going to stop the other team from stopping you. And that's the difficult part. And managers who don't have it get found out, they get left behind, and they get the fucking sack. Then Villa can't keep persisting with sending out 11 players who look clueless. It's not fucking fair on the players either. The players are better than this. The players need to be given a hand here. We can't just be not passing the ball back to... Like, we were falling into Bournemouth's trap on the halfway line of letting Carlos have the ball. What the fuck is that about?
Yeah. Yeah, and this just sort of brings me on to the next nomination on the You Like Glenn Whedon Take a 90th Minute Penalty Award. Is, do you know when Gerrard often, and he says it with such conviction, the players are going to have to listen. It's very important that they take on board what we have to tell them. What's he talking about? Like, what is he telling them? What are the instructions? I honestly, it is the time now to ask that question. Like, we're one game into the season, but it's like he took over in November. Like, he's been there a long time now, and he probably got away with it because a lot of people were saying, like, yeah, okay, give him his preseason, let him sign players or whatever else. But here we are now. Like, this is the season starting, and when we all said, if like it's Aston Villa, managers get put under pressure very quickly, and here you are now at the start of your first season, and it looks worse. It looks worse than it did last season.
Well, this is what I was saying at the end of last season. The big problem is that we haven't changed. Like, there's other than the players in the team sheet, there's no reason to believe that we've changed our manager. I mean, if you were just turning up to watch Aston Villa games, you wouldn't know that we had changed our manager in the last 2 years, because we're playing the same turgid nonsense going nowhere football since February 2021. We have no game plan. I couldn't believe within 3 minutes Carlos was getting the ball and just dinking one forward. I said, what the fuck is happening here?
Yeah.
Has Mings suddenly become 3 inches shorter? Why has this happened immediately? The beginning of the season, like you said, we have to get a proper preseason on this so we can, you know, develop as a club. Develop what?
Yeah.
What was he working on? It definitely wasn't fucking fitness either.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like, you know, you're going to lose games in the season, and you know sometimes you're not going to play as well as you'd like, or sometimes like someone will go against you, and it happens. But just there was nothing. We didn't even see, like, at least we look fit, or at least that player is really coming into his own, or like at least it's obvious what we're trying to do there. That didn't work, or we got screwed over and got the wind taken out of our sails. No, we just were shit from start to finish. And like, the only other two nominations I have is the crossing the ball. Like, that's part of what we're talking about. Like, how have we taken such a long break in the summer, and we've come back with this as our best idea against a championship team? Like, if they're used to one thing, it's crosses going into their box. And especially if they've got three centre halves, like you already mentioned, and three centre midfielders coming in to help out as well, and two fullbacks coming in to help that. Like, they're well set up for crossing. Like, the big step up from Championship to Premier League is supposed to be the speed, the how quick the ball's being moved, like how fast you have to be thinking, the mistakes being punished. Nothing. We just cross the ball into the box and let them head it clear, or just let them take it down and take it out. And I don't know, like, this is probably a hindsight thing, because I think, you know, how big a Konsa fan I have been anyway, but, you know, should Mings not playing be nominated? Because, just, you know, it is a hindsight thing I'm saying it for, but in hindsight it seems like he should have played.
Like, yeah, they scored from their two knockdowns, we got our two, or from two headers, we got our two chances from a little clip forward and from a cross as well. It was just such a low quality game, but there's no need for Tyrone Mings to be brought into that game. We should be able to handle it, and I want to see us losing games, not because we, you know, the other manager outthinking you is a fine way to lose a game as well. But whenever it's just two teams that are just sent out to play a game, it was like two fucking PE teachers just rolling the ball. You didn't give a fuck. Like, go out and play amongst yourselves there, and then just sat there having a fag in the shed. Like, what the fuck was going on there? It was such a terrible game. I don't think Tyrone Mings would have made any difference, really, because he was just going to stand on the other side to Tyrone Mings. That's what he would have done. That's why he went to Konsa's side. It wouldn't have been very difficult for Kiefer Moore to figure that out. If Tyrone Mings is there, don't stand next to him. So it wouldn't have made a huge amount of difference.
The Steve Bruce, we need to dust ourselves off. Worst post-match interview moment. the guy who... I think I might have spoken about him before, but the guy who does the away interviews for the Aston Villa social media account, I think he's the person I like least in the world. Because, oh my God, like, the questions, just go back and listen to any of these interviews. I did a super cut of them before, but I could also do a super cut of Gerrard and how often this is one of the nominations, how often he said, it's on me. I could do that now for 15 games. Gerrard saying, it's on me, it's on me. And as much as I prefer that to the Frank Lampard strategy of playing, like, you know, just putting everything on the players immediately. After a while, it's like, yeah, well what are you doing about it? I appreciate that it's on you, but, like, you know, you have to show me something now to show that we're not going to do it again. And then, like, I think the worst of it was Gerrard talking about how they controlled the game. I mean, yeah, like, if ever there was an example of a team controlling the game without the ball, it was Bournemouth today. Like, they just let Villa go into exactly where they wanted Villa to go into, and Villa, like the suckers they were, did it. Gerrard actually said the words, we didn't do an awful lot wrong. That is fucking scary. That's what the manager said after a game like that, after a performance like that, and they think that he thinks we controlled the game. Like, we had this all throughout last season where it was worrying that, too often in the interviews, it seemed like he thought only thing we were missing was it was clinical finishing, and it's like, definitely wasn't the only issue. You can't just drop in a world-class striker, especially into a mid-table Premier League team, and just assume everything works. And, like, you have to create chances for them, and Villa haven't been creating chances for a long time now. But the idea that we control that game, I don't know, it's frightening if he thinks that's the case.
Well, it's completely at odds with him also saying that's on me, you know, to say we controlled the game and we didn't do much wrong. That's like him saying his game plan was implemented, but then to also say it's on him, the performance is ridiculous. He obviously doesn't think there's anything wrong with how he played, and that is absolutely terrifying. And he obviously thinks by saying it's on me that he's protecting his players. Protect them by giving them a fucking game plan. Protect them by getting them out of tricky situations. Protect them by telling them where to stand whenever Carlos has the ball, where to run to whenever that gets blocked off. Protect them by understanding how Bournemouth are going to set up and then having a system of play, patterns of play, and a formation that will exploit how Bournemouth are playing. Don't protect them after every fucking week by saying it's your fault. We know it's your fault. We're watching the fucking game.
The next nomination from that interview, it's the winner, definitely. There's two more nominations, but this one has to win. This is from a two-minute interview. It's the two of them celebrating how Bournemouth didn't cut them open. I think the interviewer asked the question. Well, it's never really a question. It's just a statement. Defensively, they didn't worry us too much outside those two moments. Yeah, outside the two goals. The only two goals of the game. It just shows how ruthless this league can be, or how ruthless the championship can be as well. It's like, you know, if Villa think Bournemouth are ruthless, we're going to have a lot of trouble next year if we keep going the way we're going.
Yeah, defensively they didn't trouble us. except by doing two absolutely rudimentary things that anybody at any level of the sport should be able to defend against.
Yeah, that troubled us a lot.
Yeah, exactly. That troubles us so much that they scored two goals from it, and that was the only two attacks that they had as well, don't forget.
Yeah. The last nomination is, well, it's just a final question. Again, statement. One game obviously won't define a season. Head back to Villa Park next week, looking to get that first win. You know, like, look, I get it. Like, you're part of the club. You're not going to come out now and start, like, you're not going to completely slate Gerrard to his face on the club's official channels. But maybe just take these statements out. Just put up the Gerrard quotes, or I don't know. Just don't put it up at all. I don't want to see it. I've said this too often though, as well. Every time, like, I am not appeased by this spin. Like, I think this calculated choice of words doesn't help me move on to next week, and just makes me more angry. I'm really angry as it is, and I don't need fuel added to the fire. You know, just go away. Just don't tweet until there's something worth tweeting about.
Until you sign some fucking players.
Sign a fucking player.
But like, that is the annoying thing. What is the point of these? Everybody knows what went wrong. So there's no point. There's no point in asking the questions. There's no point in asking the questions if they're completely loaded, if you're defending the manager before you've already asked the question. And there's certainly no point in asking the question if you know what the response is going to be. Steven Gerrard is media trained. The training went as far as giving him three things to say, and he'll say those three things after every fucking game.
Yeah. The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award. Only two nominations on the pitch. It's two Philippe Coutinho ones. The free kick in the second half, everybody probably remembers. He just drills it out for a goal kick. Like, he just rolled it. He's on the right, sort of on the half space on the right hand side. Everybody's queued up on the left side of the box, and he just rolls it out of play. I think maybe Bailey was talking about doing a run down the channel, and nothing happened. Just Coutinho rolled it out. And the other one was him and John McGinn standing over a free kick 40 yards out on the sideline. I don't know why we need two players standing over a free kick from that position, on the right back position, really. And Coutinho dummies it, runs over the top of it. And then John McGinn comes 5 seconds later and just whips it in anyway, about 60 yards away to the far side of the box. Gets head of clear. You know, Austin McPhee, you know, he's an up and down man in this community of the Villa podcast. But I don't know why he's condoning these shimmies over the ball that far out.
Yeah, the first one, I actually liked it. I mean, it was probably the only pass we played forward along the ground. So it was reassuring to know that the players know it's within the rules to do that. And the next step in our progression is making sure there's another human in front of the pass as well. Like, the idea of dummying a free kick from 40 or 50 yards out. I mean, the ball's going to be, not only is it clearly moronic anyway, but the ball's going to be in the air for so long that the dummy becomes irrelevant immediately. You're trying to catch people out by making them move. Sure, the keeper could walk between his posts before the ball comes in from John McGinn's cross. The dummy is completely pointless. And the fact that we're crossing the ball from that position.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, like, what have we become? I know we're playing a championship club, but come on, Stevie. And maybe this is the thing. Maybe Steven Gerrard is just used to managing in the Scottish Premier League. Maybe that's the big problem here. Maybe he doesn't actually have any tactical nous. And maybe the fact that he was able to go unbeaten for Rangers just means that he's a good motivator, that he is good at protecting his players. Maybe they just had way better players during that season.
Takes me on nicely to the last nomination of the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award, which is, what the fuck is the plan here? What is the plan? We talk about ambitious owners. We've added two new players to the team this summer. Like, is that really a sign of major ambition? Obviously, there's been great investment over the last number of years, but this summer in particular, like, and the reason I think it's more pressing right now is because surely Gerrard knows himself as well. If, especially the way he's been approaching, it seems to be approaching based on the evidence we've seen today, approaching the season, he's going to need more players, better players up top. If he just wants those guys to deliver a bit of magic and score, he's going to need some sensational players up there to just turn it on, and he can set up the back six, back seven, back eight, whatever way he wants. Like, surely he knows we need more money, more investment in the squad. Like, what is the plan? I don't know. Like, right now, like, I would have thought the squad looked all right. Yeah, that's why I was saying, geez, we could go for seventh off the back of you pushing me in that direction. By the way, I said 9th to 14th, and you got me hopes up for seventh, but you know, I didn't think the squad was that bad. We still probably think it's not, but it does look that bad under this current model. So this model probably needs upgrading.
Yeah, it's amazing what 90 minutes can make you think. And you did say this on the podcast on Thursday. Yeah, you can imagine halfway through the season us just saying, oh, the players aren't good enough. The players are good enough. Like, this is the reason why it wasn't difficult to predict that Villa would finish between 9th and 14th over the last two seasons, because I knew the players weren't good enough. I just had to look at the players on the pages for the teams across the Premier League, and you can predict where teams are going to finish. It's not difficult. It's not a particularly good skill. There'll be the odd team that breaks out. There'll be the odd team that has a shit manager. But based on the players, based on the wage bill of clubs, you can tell where teams are going to finish. And Aston Villa should be competing for 7th to 10th of the players that they have. But the plan absolutely has to be to sign another forward. We said this on Thursday as well. Villa need another bit of magic up there. They need someone who can come on and change the game. Because it can't, like, are we going to go through the season just bringing on Buendia either between half-time and the 80th minute? Is that the plan now, to change games? Yeah. Like that is going to be so easy. Like, not only will a team be able to look at Villa, figure out how they're going to play at the start, they know what they're going to do in game then as well, so there's no element of surprise. Get ready for it. Between the 45th and 80th minute, they're going to be bringing on Buendia, which will change fuck all. He'll run around with a lot of energy, but he's going to be playing with a load of numpties who don't understand that they should be running into space for him. They should be coming short, going long, running in behind. Like, it doesn't matter. Buendia can run around as much as he wants. He's got nobody to pass the fucking ball to.
He really does expose, like, how little enthusiasm the rest of them have. Like, he looks like the outlier. Like, he looks like the rare one that he's running around with so much energy and, like, buzz. Like, what? Like, they're making him look like the stupid person because he's getting the ball and passing and looking for it again. Like, it's just statues standing around looking at him, and he's just got far too much excitement. It's almost like, what are you doing? It's like, you know, people are just, like, too cool to be getting involved in this activity too seriously, and he's the one that is doing it.
That's so grim.
Yeah. The Vitamin meter, I only have one thing going up, really, which is a bit of a stretch, but I know you like this one. The blue on blue on blue jersey short socks combination. Look good, didn't it?
Great day to talk about fashion, Con. You caught me on a good day, so I'll indulge you. I won't. Who's going down?
Going down, Matt Cash and Luca Dean, obviously, for all the reasons we mentioned, like Matt Cash winning the Remy Gard Award, Luca Dean literally being AWOL for the first goal. Well, actually, you know, here we are a couple of days later as well, off the back of us saying that they're the third best fullback pairing in the league, and they just don't show anything. They're doing, like, they need to be more important in the team, and that brings me on to somebody else who's young, but he needs, like, he can't be coming off after 45 minutes. That was a bad day for Jacob Ramsey. I think he needs to be moving on to another level and another standard of himself to not have the curly finger pointed at him. Like, he needs to be bigger than that now, I think.
Yeah, but like, what's the point in picking Ramsey out? I mean, you've just watched the manager crash the ship into rocks, and then you've walked down into the hall, pointed at one of the rowers and said, you cunt, come with me. What the fuck are you at? Like, it's not Jacob. Like, Jacob Ramsey was taken off because we were 1-0 down and he couldn't take off as captain. Like, that's the reason Jacob Ramsey was taken off. Bailey could have came off, Coutinho could have came off, Ings could have came off. They were all fucking shite. We covered the two fullbacks. The whole team was completely malfunctioning. And because Aston Villa are so predictable, Jacob Ramsey was coming off for Emi Buendia, and there was no question in any sentient Aston Villa fan's mind that was happening at halftime. That was just the manager's out. That's what he thought he was going to do to change the game, and it was so predictable and so pointless.
Yeah. I suppose, like, I'm not laying this game on Jacob Ramsey's door. I suppose I'm wondering, you know, why is Buendia showing a bit of spark in that position, and why is Ramsey not? Like, you know, because we know what Jacob Ramsey can do, but it shouldn't be that. Because, like, I'm looking at that now, being like, well, why doesn't Buendia just play there instead of him? Because, like, there's another nomination for earlier in the show, like, you just play Buendia there. He's always your best player when he comes on, and now we can play in number 8. It turns out.
Yeah, but why was nobody showing any spark? That's what my point is. Buendia comes on to give spark. He's told you're going to go on and change this game. If Ramsey had to come on in that game for McGinn, then Ramsey would have looked better as well. He would have looked like he had a bit of spark. But, like, yeah. There's so many players you could just pick out. Like, anyone, like, honestly, any one of those, that front six could have been taken off. It was a waste of time them playing. I can imagine we were getting excited about Leon Bailey because he hit a volley into the ground and it looked up over the keeper. and because he had the wherewithal to run at Victor Lindelof and then hit a shot on target against David De Gea. Leon Bailey's not a serious footballer, and we find that out every fucking time he plays.
A lot of people were happy for performance today.
He's a waste of time. The whole team was a waste of time. Leon Bailey was shite. Ramsey was shite. McGinn was non-existent for our fucking captain. Kamara couldn't have had a worse start to his career. Danny Ings is Danny Ings. How many more times can I go after Danny Ings?
Yeah, Coutinho was in it. I didn't even put Danny Ings going down because he's probably down far enough anyway from last season. Coutinho was the other player I have going down. Just for taking easy way out again, I said it should be a fine assistant for him. We'll add that in. Every time he crosses the halfway line, he should be fine because that's not what he's there to do. It's not what anybody's there to do anyway outside of the centre-backs, but especially him. And I think he was getting a bit of an out just on the commentary I'm looking at, just because we were crossing the ball into the box. And I the sort of point you're making about Ramsey as well, we were all bad. If I'm saying Ramsey needs to demand better of himself, Coutinho needs to be the fucking leader of the team. He needs to stop that shit happening. These players do that. They're magnets for the ball. They shape the game. That's what Coutinho can do. We've seen him do it. And he has to just be a bit more command. It doesn't matter if they're playing up his fucking arse. Tell them to pass the ball to you. Just go hunt them for it, left or right. You can go wherever you want. You have that license. The manager fucking loves you. Just go and affect the game and stop the rot. Stop the shit. And I'd lay it more on his door for the front six, really, because it's Coutinho. He's the big signing. He's the big profile. He's the player who can do it as well, never mind his reputation. I got exactly what I expected from Ings today in the lone striker role.
Yeah, you're right. Philip Coutinho has to say to players, just because you wouldn't want to receive the ball there doesn't mean you don't play it to me.
Yeah.
Give me the fucking ball in that position. And that's exactly when you should be giving it to him as well, whenever it looks too tight, because then he'll turn and all of a sudden there's a gap. I do feel a little bit sorry, I don't feel bad about it. It is almost pointless giving out about them. The amount of times that Leon Bailey refused to cross because it was on his right foot. Every time Leon Bailey gets a ball, you know he wants to go onto his left. That's irritating. But he was also refusing crosses on his right because there's nobody in the fucking box. Because we weren't getting anybody up there. Coutinho had to drift out in his own head because he wasn't getting on the ball. That's just what players like Philippe Coutinho do. That obviously has to be taken out of their game because it's completely counterproductive. He has to just have the discipline to stay there and wait for the ball to come to him. But they don't. Those players never do. Whenever their teams are having a stinker, they come out to touch the ball. And all this comes back to the fact that the team completely malfunctioned. So those players will be led down those alleys.
Only other thing going down was the camera angle. Yeah, it just keeps going down lower and lower and lower. As the game progressed, Jesus, I don't want to see another game in that stadium ever again. What a fucking terrible shot that was.
It was rough. You couldn't see when a chance was on, when a shot was happening. I couldn't see if Kamara actually was shit. I couldn't tell anything. I don't know if he was covering off space well. You have no idea what was going on. Coutinho picks up the ball. You don't know if passes are actually happening. It was dreadful. It shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Do Chelsea think that they screwed over Brighton by giving them 62 million for a left back?
Yeah. I mean, I said on Thursday that I thought Ben Chilwell was the most overrated player in England. Turns out the new Chelsea owners agree if they're willing to throw that amount of money after Cucurella. Fucking hell. Yeah. And look, ever since Qatar said, fuck this, we can't get the stains out with Zlatan, can we try rinsing it with Neymar for 220 million? And then Barca took that money, added 50 million to it, and spent it all on Coutinho and Dembele. The ability to attach any sort of scrutiny or value to transfer fees is completely gone. But let's get real here. We can still see an abhorrent waste of money when it happens. It's not quite Harry Maguire, but it's 62 million on a left back. A left back that I think is good.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's the most surprising thing. He's really good, and he's a cunt. But he's not linking up with his kindred spirit Pep. That's probably the most surprising thing about all this.
Yeah, this is a sort of example here. We're going to have loads of time to go after Gary Neville. He hasn't said anything on this, but it is a sort of one where he would later in the year talk about how smart Man City are with their money because they wouldn't spend that much on Mark Cucurella. Like, that's the sort of thing he'll be praising City for. He praises him far too often, to be honest. But yeah, the reason I'm picking on Chelsea here is just because the Chelsea social media admin is notorious as well for being a bit salty. Like, but during the week, Brighton have been playing these two clubs like a fiddle for the last week, like, just watching the price of Cucurella going up. And they put out a statement after everybody thought that, like, Jesus Christ, Chelsea are spending 50 million on Mark Cucurella. Brighton then said, contrary to inaccurate reports from numerous media outlets, no agreement has been reached with any club to sell Cucurella. And then Chelsea come back like 2 days later when they've obviously upped it by another 12 million. They've just word for word saying the same statement saying they can confirm that an agreement has been reached. But yeah, just throwing a bit of shithousery towards Brighton there. I don't think you can do that after you've just given them their record fee by a distance on a player they only bought last year for about 16 million.
I think you're right, Colin.
last question we can answer, but probably will. I know I'm panicking a bit now after one season or after one game, but like, that's what's going to happen now. Like, when you get completely outplayed by a championship team, surely this either was or is, that definitely had to be the year that Villa went for, the season that went for. Like, this is a World Cup season. Like this opportunity is never going to come around again. Like Villa, for a team who can't finish the season, like, we've talked about them going onto the beach over the last 2 years, like they're getting a 6 week break in the middle of the season. It's done for them. Like, they, this team who can't sustain a full campaign are getting 6 weeks to put their feet up. Most of their players won't be involved in the World Cup. They're playing against teams with more eyes on getting injured ahead of that World Cup, because they're actually going to have a lot of players who are going into it, like, straight in to that. Like, if England win the World Cup, Harry Kane lifts the trophy, he has to go 8 days later to play Brentford on Stephen's Day. Like, that's the reality for a lot of these players. That, like, the Champions League teams, they're going to be playing six group games now over the next 8 weeks. That's just before the World Cup as well. And then we're back, like I say, on the 26th. Like, this was the year that Villa really could have put in a massive effort to try and break in. They're not just the top seven, who knows? Beyond a bit of investment, you know, a bit of, I don't know. Like, we're nowhere fucking near it. I think that's the really depressing thing.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, couldn't even see out a season the last 2 years. Couldn't even see out 2 minutes this season. I mean, there's no reason to suspect that the fact that the season will be broken up by the World Cup will have any sort of a benefit on Aston Villa. And the absolute fetish for playing games on Boxing Day is not going to be of any use to Aston Villa either, because I think we play Liverpool as well. No. So none of those players are going to go deep into the World Cup. Like, Alisson's a goalkeeper. Trent Alexander-Arnold will be one of seven right backs, so he'll have plenty of time to rest during the World Cup if he gets on the fucking pitch. Van Dijk's not going to go far in the World Cup. Matip retired from international football when he was 25. Robertson's Scottish. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, none of these players are going to be affected. Salah didn't get in. Liverpool are going to be absolutely flying for it. They're going to have a load of players who are coming back angry and hungry that their season was broken up and just steamroll us, because we're going to have a bunch of lads who, as it turns out, whenever they do finally get on the beach and have a break, they do fuck all with it and just come steaming back into the new season like they're steaming pissed.
Yeah, like, the World Cup's packing a lot of heat. We all know, like, the reasons that it's in the winter, and, you know, like, obviously nobody agrees with that, and the fact that Qatar got it in the first place. Yeah, that's all well documented. We don't even need to qualify it anymore. But there is a part of me, once you get past all the real serious stuff, there's a part of me that's thinking, this is cool having a World Cup breaking up the season. Like, who cares if the Premier League takes a break for a while? I don't know. Am I a bit too impure as an English football fan to just think, like, yeah, I wouldn't mind a World Cup planted at Christmas? Like, that's fun to watch. Like, obviously, again, and why I'm going to qualify it, all the reasons that it is at this time of year, I don't agree with, and I'd rather it not happen. But the fact that it is happening now, I think that'll be an enjoyable few weeks.
Yeah, like, it's impossible to hold a World Cup in that part of the world at a traditional time of the year, and we shouldn't be excluding parts of the world from hosting the World Cup because of their geography. But any bid should include the fact that the tournament would have to be moved to the winter. And it could be judged on that basis then. And any bidding process shouldn't be judged by Sepp Blatter. and there's plenty of other better reasons to not give the World Cup to Qatar. And there are more important conditions that could be attached to any bid coming in from them. We know all that. But I mean, I actually think it'll be enjoyable as well. I mean, it'll give us a break from watching Aston Villa for a fucking start.
I think that's probably why I'm looking forward to it.
Ireland won't be playing either. I mean, we break the season up 3 or 4 times a year to watch Ireland play Armenia. We can watch a fucking World Cup for 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's so true. I think the way I'm looking at it, I think it's laid out 16 games before the World Cup and 22 after. So 15 more games to go and we all get beat. 15 more games, we can do it. Let's hang in there together. And that's it. Until Thursday, we'll see you then. Thanks a million for listening. And please subscribe if you haven't done so already. We're on the Villa Podcast on Twitter. We're the Villa Podcast Show on Instagram. And just because Nick Watts requested it on Twitter, and because we probably need to laugh at somebody else other than ourselves after an hour of kicking ourselves in the stones, here's that Harry Maguire audio bit.
I've been letting you down, down.
You think Harry Maguire is a bigger loss than Harry Kane?
Yeah, I do. You lose Harry Maguire. That's a big problem for Gareth Southgate.
His biggest problem?
Yeah, I think it's his biggest problem. The situation got out of
hand. I hope you understand. Are you mental? It can happen to any one of us. This is analysis that you have to pay to get.
That's bollocks on so many levels, because like number one is Harry Maguire.
Oh God, I cannot believe that Harry Maguire has played 6 games this season and he's made the same mistake 5 times.
Number 2, the drop off from Harry Maguire to Tyrone Mings is not what Gary fucking Neville thinks it is.
And I remember people saying, Harry Maguire.
Gary Neville, for some reason, has disappeared up Gareth Southgate's arse.
I think we've got the best manager we could possibly have for an international team.
I just don't know why Gary Neville is persistent in trying to talk him into Franz Beckenbauer.
He's a fucking siren call on England to shipwreck. It can happen to
anyone of us. I think with Harry Maguire injured, I think the ability to go to a back four is lost.
He was by far the worst player on the pitch. He's really shit.
Imagine Harry Maguire was missing.
Harry Maguire!
But it's absolutely unbelievable how whenever you play a ball to a fridge, you end up conceding the chance.
The most blocks, most interceptions, most headers, most tackles. For Man United, he had more blocks than Lindelof.
Harry Maguire!
Harry Maguire.
He just cannot get the ball out of his feet. And I know he cost 80 million, so it must be difficult for people to make the link that he's actually shit, but just make that link.
Harry Maguire. The situation
got out of hand. 50% of Gareth Southgate's preferred team started the Champions League final 3 weeks ago. Who've collected more trophies in England than Harry Maguire has convictions in Greece.
Harry Maguire!
You would pick a team with Maguire and Calvert-Lewin rather than Mings and Harry fucking Kane.
Apologies to the fans. But no emotion behind it.
England's most important player is Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire!
That is just insane stuff. Grow up, Gary Neville.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.